Welcome, well, hello, cameras are off, and welcome everyone to another episode of Maybe Next Year, the podcast that took a week off last week. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Yeah, we, I realized we didn't mention that. We didn't talk about the bye week at all during our last podcast. We usually mention that because during the bye week, we take our week off since there's usually less news. But we're back. We're rested. We're ready for Tampa Bay. But first, before we do that, we're going to talk about Bills Bengals. We're going to talk about some of the injuries. We're going to get to your Facebook and Twitter questions, this day in Bills history, and we're going to make sure to preview the other two games in before the end of the half season, including the third game, which comes up this week, Bills Bucks. But first, Buffalo, a week ago now, drops a tightish one to the Cincinnati Bengals to fall to 3-2. The Bengals are now 2-3. They lose 20-16. They led it a couple different times during the game, but couldn't basically hold off Cincinnati in the fourth quarter. It's been a week since this game, guys. So I'll start off a little of it. The running game wasn't as putrid as it had been, but it still wasn't very good. I think that's fair. The other big story, of course, is Charles Clay going down for, I'm honestly not sure how long, but certainly the foreseeable future and towards the beginning of that game. And the Bills were already sort of shorthanded on offense as it was. And if you want to take it even a step further, of course, they had started the season a bit shorthanded on offense. And so, it's sort of a good bookend to the previous week with Atlanta where you had the best possible of all possible worlds with how the Bills could win, hold the team to about 20, and then sneak something in with have just enough offense. And then if you take away just really one more piece, the same thing happened. Hold team about 20, but you can't really get over that. So let's start with Scott, who we never start with Scott on game breaks. We always go to Paul first because he's the more Buffalonian of the two. But I'm going to start with Scott. To see his thoughts on the Bengals game.
Because I'm always, I'm always smart. So we should always start with me.
Yes.
I think it was obviously a frustrating game to watch. Now that we've been through a whole week's news cycle, it's been interesting to kind of see the initial like revulsion of like, oh, it's Tyrod. He's so terrible. We have to get him out of there. Where's Peterman? And then kind of like as the week gone on, like the saner voices start to kind of come through again of like, well, you know, let's maybe starting a rookie quarterback's not usually the best idea. And maybe we should, you know, Tyrod has kind of gotten us to a 3-2 record. So maybe we should give him a little bit of a chance. I think it's clear at this point the run game needed work. Whether it'll get fixed in the bye week is tough to say. Obviously, we get Chantrell back today. So I can't it's funny that we're looking forward to Chantrell Henderson being back as kind of the thing.
Yeah. That says a lot about the fortunes of this
game.
Like, oh my God, Chantrell Henderson is coming back.
Exactly. But ultimately, like, the bigger issue is just everyone figuring out how to run the zone offense. And there's been a lot of good breakdowns in the last couple of days of how the stretch outside zone play just isn't working as well. And maybe we figured out the inside zone by now. So hopefully that'll help, the run game a little bit. And I'm going to run upstairs, real quick. So continue on without me.
Very good. Definitely not a baby needing attention or help.
No.
Paul, sure, what are your thoughts? Nope. Paul, what were your thoughts on the Bengals game?
It was, it was a frustrating game to watch, but I can't say I'm altogether surprised. One of the great takeaways I've had, not just from that game, but the this past weekend's game, is we are so early in the season still. I feel we can't make any relevant conclusions, but we're not really that early. Every team has played 5 or 6 games, but, you know, I felt great about the Bills after watching how they played these tough opponents. But then you go and say, oh, wait, did Miami just go on the road and beat Atlanta yesterday? Oh, they did. Did Denver just get whooped at home by a winless Giant team? Yes, they did. Did Carolina just lose a home game as well? Yes, they did. So all of these, you know, things that made me think, oh, wow, the Bills are competing with these top teams and letting it, you know, and winning games or staying with them, whatever it happens to be, you know, they – I was a little concerned about that, you know, maybe they're not quite as there as we'd hoped they were. And that's kind of what I took into the Bengals game, too, is the Bengals went in only 1-3, proceeded to, you know, they had injuries, and this is where, you know, you and I, frankly, had our little did we have a Twitter debate? I'm not sure what exactly.
Oh, yeah. I was angry at you about something. Yeah. I forgot.
I think it was injury. I was trying to note the Bengals injuries. Really, you know, they had the same quality of injuries as the Bills, and you said bullshit or something along. No, now we've got to make this explicit. Sorry. And this is.
Yeah, no. I never do that anymore. It's fine. No, I think that right. And the more I thought about that, I think that's what I was thinking about was starting day of. On Sunday, I think losing Clay and Gaines was more important to the Bills than who the Bengals had lost. But I think if you go back to how, like I was saying originally, like how the teams are constructed, you know, this team was never constructed to be deep on offense, or it wasn't. So on that level, I sort of do agree with you that it's kind of like they need to get over their injuries and that's sort of their failing that they didn't. On the other hand, I don't know.
Thinking was more that, you know, the Bengals had lost Adam Jones and Tyler Boyd and Drake Kirkpatrick during the course of the game. That's, you know, two of their top secondary guys ended up leaving the game. But the point I was driving at, and you just really hit it, is you really saw the Bills' lack of depth exposed in this game. Tyrod took, what, 6 sacks, I believe, somewhere along those lines.
Right.
And normally the reason is because he's looking around, you're seeing all of these receivers just blanketed. He really did not have a lot of options when he was looking around in this game, especially after the Clay injury. So it was really, it's that big concern we have is, you know, the Bills have frontline talent. It's not like they are talentless when you look at the starters, but you see some of those starters go down and you're asking the Matt Milanos of the world to make contributions, the Nick O'Leary's of the world to make contributions. A receiving core that was already decimated, now losing Clay and Matthews, Clay for at least weeks, Matthews maybe at least this week, if not longer, and last week. So, you know, all of those things really add up for this team and makes you think, how are they going to navigate this? On the plus side, the amount of mediocrity present in the American Football Conference right now, you look at it and think, okay, well, there's still a legitimate chance that they win some games, be entertaining, do things this season, and you hope they use the bye week, if nothing else, than to, you know, as you know, the ranking wasn't as putrid, but they really need to fix this running game and get it on track. And there was an article in the Buffalo News a couple weeks ago, you know, has LeSean McCoy lost a step? And I'm hoping he read that article just to piss him off and go into the next game as motivated as can be against Tampa.
It's never looked like LeSean McCoy wasn't running well. Honestly, it's always to me looked like they have never gotten a chance to get off the block because I've seen him make 2 yards out of nothing more than once. And it's just a matter of they're not giving him much. And I fully believe that if they can get the blocking scheme down, or they can adjust it to what their players can do, they're going to be able to rip off some bigger runs. And I think the other thing is, you know, it's just going to be harder all year because they're going to put 8 in the box. You know, they'd put 9 in the box maybe, depending. We can get to a point where I think they would maybe leave a wide receiver entirely uncovered, depending on which one it was. But let's talk briefly about, because we're going to come back for 3 stars when Scott's ready here. So I don't want to delve into the stats of the game, but let's talk about what happened this week. In the NFL, certainly as it pertains to the Bills, you mentioned Miami beating Atlanta and sort of both like in a college football-y way, devaluing the Bills.
Yes, the strength of victory, you know, takes a little bit of a hit there, although the Bills will have to beat the Dolphins later. So I guess that isn't where the hit comes in. But I always like, you know, whenever there's an AFC playing an NFC team, you know, you kind of want those opponents to lose, except in the case of the Broncos, I kind of wanted to win because it would show like, oh, the Bills are a very good team and, you know, better the record Broncos have, you know, I don't know.
They were almost 2 touchdown favorites and they lost by 13 points. And I think there's some chalking up to, how any given week, the sort of any given week sort of, mentality of, you know, just, New York, the Giants were probably going to win a game this year. It's a little surprising it came against Denver maybe, but you know, maybe not by the time all said and done, but you hit the nail on the head. I think there are really 2 good teams in the AFC and then a lot of other people. I think Kansas City's good, and I still can't dismiss New England, but I think between New England and Pittsburgh, you could pick one of them. Those is a good team. Pittsburgh also, you know, both New England and Pittsburgh have had it handed to them, and New England was in a dogfight with the New York Jets this week, with, you know, at least a controversial call sort of potentially swinging the tide for those teams. And, you know,
One which I will never understand, and I'm not a big pro-Jets advocate, but I just failed to, I don't know, I was not a huge proponent of that call. I don't think any non-Patriots fans are.
Well, you've got, like, Doug Marone's Jacksonville Jaguars in first place in the South with a 3-3 record. And so...
Yeah, if you look at the... And not to interrupt, but if you look at the AFC standings, as I'm looking at right now, because I remember this yesterday, there are two teams who have records that aren't between 2-4 and 4-2. And those two teams are the 0-6 Browns and the 5-1 Chiefs. And 5-1 Chiefs, they were beatable, losing to the now 4-2 Steelers at home as well. So just the level of parity. Same in the NFC, too. You've got the Eagles 5-1, the Giants now 1-5, the 49ers 0-6, and every single other team between 2-4 and 4-2.
Yeah, and Buffalo still, I mean, is only a half game out of first place based on the fact that they didn't play this week. But furthermore, would kind of be sitting in the first wild card spot right now because they would have a tiebreaker over Denver and a better record than the other teams in the divisions. And so they, you know, it was certainly disappointing to not be, you know, 4-1. And certainly with a winnable game, it felt kind of extra bad.
And a winnable game against an AFC team that you could be competing with for a wild card spot at the end of the year.
I was just going to say they've still built a record that is competitive in the AFC East, you know, five games in, we're not talking about, man, we're just outside of something. It's like, no, this is a division leading team at least.
Yep.
And by the way, I mean, I don't want to like jump too far ahead, but you know, the next couple of games are against a struggling Oakland team, a Bucks team that is missing somebody. And, you know, the Jets, who are maybe playing better than certainly better than everyone thought they would be. But, you know, you've beat them once already. And so, you know, there's suddenly you got through this really rough patch where, you know, all of us would have been not surprised if they were 1-4 at this point, if at the beginning of the year. Yeah. You know, you're 3-2, and now you're in this part of this, you get a bit of a gift here with Oakland scuffling. And, man, you could do some real damage. You could really kind of cement your record in the upper tiers of the AFC.
Right, and you've got really for the next five, we'll go into our future games in a minute, but for the next five are at the very least games the Bills could win and may be favored in many of those. But, you know, they haven't been – the Bills have not been favored since week one, since they played the Jets. So now this enters the point of their schedule where they're – expected to win some games, and even if they don't come out of it 4-1, even if they come out of it 3-2 in the next five games, well, then you're 2/3 of the way through the season and you're 6-4, and that's not a terrible spot to be in for the Bills. And you know, I don't want to be overly optimistic because you know they're coming off a tough loss, and we don't want to harbor on the same points everyone else already has. It's pretty clear what the issue is. They've got to, you know, remedy some of the problems they're having on offense. They've got to hope that they get some players back because they just don't have the depth. Dennison's got to be creative with the play calling, et cetera. And they really don't have much to worry about on defense. We did have a mild disagreement. We'll talk about the Zay Jones situation, but I'm a big fan of Zay's, even though despite my criticism of him. So, you know, we'll see how those things merge in the next few weeks. But if they can get to 6-2 by chance, which I understand, again, now they've got to win 3 in a row to do that, that's what I consider the point. And the reason I consider that like the point the team should get to is because of they've been 5-3 numerous times during the stretch, the playoff stretch. They have never made it to 6-2.
Right.
So I really want to see what they can do the next few weeks, starting with the Bucs. I am disheartened by the performance against Cincinnati, but certainly not. It doesn't throw me off the path that they were on, I don't think. We talked about the parity in the AFC and the parity in the entire league right now. So these opportunities are out there. You know, the people can just bear patience with the team, and we'll see where things end up going.
We're going to move on. Scott's three stars will be available when Scott is available, but he is currently detained. When he gets a chance to get back, we'll go back to that. But for now, we're going to talk a bit about some of the injuries People coming back, people leaving. And I'm going to go right to Paul on this. Paul, I actually don't know. Do we know how long Charles Clay is expected to be out for?
They have said.
Is there a reason I can't find this?
No, they're giving the very ambiguous, and I say they, it's McDermott giving the very ambiguous week to week. Now, the good news is there were articles early on saying he's going to be out at least a month, or if this is this type of tear, he could be out the rest of the season and not start rehabbing until the summer. Obviously, those situations didn't come to fruition, so that's actually very good news for the Bills. They are giving him the week-to-week diagnosis, which I take to mean almost certainly that he is going to be out this week, because it's different from the designation they've given to Jordan Matthews, not to skip ahead to that injury, but they've called him day-to-day, which is surprising because he was considered last week to be week-to-week. So I would expect Clay to be out at least this week, and then I'll take McDermott's word on it. I like the fact that he's not trying to be deceptive. He's not saying, oh, he could be back this week. He might not be. He's just saying, essentially saying, he's not in good enough shape right now. He's not practicing, but, we'll see how he is in the coming weeks. So that's a big loss, though. That's, I want us to gloss over Charles Clay too much. He was this team's leading receiver now for multiple seasons, this one included. I talked to one of our attorneys in the Binghamton, New York office at the firm I worked for, was noting how it devastates his fantasy team because, he's got so much more production out of his tight end position than the competitors in his league. Hmm. So from the perspective of what he does for this offense, it changes the complexion of it because Nick O'Leary is fine as Nick O'Leary, but Nick O'Leary is not Charles Clay. It's like Kenneth Davis is fine, but Kenneth Davis is not Thurman Thomas fine. So, you have to just
– Now, the good news is Kenneth Davis had a couple of games where he was good enough. And so maybe Nick O'Leary can do that for a week or two if need be. But I think you're right that it's a real problem if he's out for any sort of extended period of time.
Right. And this bye week came at a great time because, as I alluded to earlier, this is one of those times where Nick Dennis, and I've renamed him. We're going to call him Nick Dennis, even though his name is Rick. So, Nicky, he's got to show some creativity with this offense now because you do not have – a lot of weapons, but you have Tyrod, a running quarterback who can throw a good deep ball. I always say that because I know there's so much disagreement in the fan base about his value, so let's just agree that he is valuable in those areas. And you can also note that they have LeSean McCoy, who's a great running back. You've got a good blocking fullback in Patrick DeMarco, and you have a couple good interior linemen anyway with Incognito and Woods. So what are you going to do to maximize the values of these players and, try and help that and help your offense move the ball overall because they have not done much of it in these games. Matthews is a huge injury. Don't get me wrong. It's not that he is a superstar wide receiver, but what do they have beyond him? And the question is, not much. You got Zay Jones as your number one guy right now, and he's a guy who wouldn't even be on the field if they weren't so thin at the receiver position.
Yeah, he really is at this point has sort of played like a rookie. It doesn't mean he won't get better, but he has missed some, opportunities. Yeah. And I think you're right. If there was anybody else, he would maybe not be playing.
Oh, yeah. Two months ago, let's be honest. If it's 2 months ago, it would be Watkins, Bolden, and Matthews would be the Bills wide receivers at this point.
Right.
They would have had that. Jones is a little shaky still.
Five wide.
Yep.
Punt, return and punt, right? He'd probably be returning punts because they would be like, he's such a playmaker, right? We'd have to hear that. Well, he's such a playmaker and he's got such good speed. Okay. He reminded me about something quickly about the Cincinnati game. When you talk about game planning, one of the things I was most frustrated about with the Bills offense in the Bengals game was that for the first time, Tyrod Taylor didn't try and run out of the pocket. He had no one left to throw to, and he only had one attempt for 3 yards rushing. And it just seemed like this is not the week to fully commit to being a pocket quarterback. This is the week where you scrap that at halftime and say, screw it. If Nick O'Leary and Zay Jones aren't open immediately, take off because we need yards and we need to open this up any way we possibly can. And I was just a little surprised. Now, hopefully going into a game where they know they're going to be a little more shorthanded, they will, bring some of that back into the game. Certainly rolling them out and play action passes. They show that those can still work even if your running game isn't great because there is a certain healthy respect for not making sure McCoy doesn't get going. But I think they're going to need to kind of work with that. And we'll have to see what a guy like Jordan Matthews has in the tank. He's made some remarkable recovery. They're saying basically that he's done very well.
Joe Biscaglia, I think it was Joe Biscaglia, might have been Sal Capaccio. So, one of those guys had a video on Twitter of Jordan Matthews catching a ball being fired at him from a machine, but doing it one-handed with his non-thumb hand. So he hasn't progressed quite to the point where he's catching with both hands now, but he's back at practice. He's ready to go. I know Ramon Humber, his thumb is still not recovered as remarkably well as Jordan Matthews has. So we're going to see Matt Milano again with the linebacker crew. So, you know, I'm not worried as much about the depth on defense, though, and I think that's probably not to put words in your mouth. I'm feeling that's the same with you because we spent so much all of this time really talking about the effect on offense, because I think we're both fine with, you know, how the secondary looked. The Gaines injury, that's probably the sketchiest. You know, they don't have much beyond Tre'Davious White in the secondary now. So
right.
I don't know if Gaines is
– he was questionable before the Bengals game and then obviously went down, and I haven't seen anything since then. That's the downside of a bye week, is you don't really hear all that as much. You know, they don't have to get back to you as quickly.
Yeah, and it looks like they categorized him last week as the dreaded week to week. But what I'm not seeing right now, which I was hoping to see, is more of an update on what he did today. But sadly, no stories from October 16th going into Gaines. So that is a decent enough injury that has me concerned. Safeties are in good shape. Front seven seems to be in good shape. So let's see if they can start helping out the back four, who've been doing really well this year. But we'll see. Those offensive injuries concern me. An optimist could know, well, the offense has already underperformed with the guys they have in there. How much less could they underperform than they have already? And you've still got Hauschka, your money man. So, you know,
yeah,
they've got those things going for them.
Yeah, if they can get within 60 yards, they have a chance. Apparently the Seahawks are interested in Cordy Glenn.
Yeah, that was that surprised me. I don't know what your reaction to that was.
Yeah, I just sort of saw this like about 20 minutes before the podcast started. And I'm reading, I guess, Jason Lockenfor's report, which I find Jason Lockenfor is reporting a little suspect, but that's okay. It would take a considerable haul to land Glenn. It can be assumed that the Bills were asking for something that the Seahawks, with which the Seahawks were unwilling to part. So I don't know. What do you even think would be the asking price for Cordy Glenn? And second of all, I don't know. What are your thoughts on doing it?
The acting price is funny because it could differ so much. It could be the Bills thinking, hey, we are happy with Dawkins as a left tackle. We can find a right tackle somewhere next year through the draft or free agency. So maybe this is the time to shop Glenn with an eye as Dawkins as the left tackle of the future, in which case maybe they'll accept a little less for that. Or they could say, well, we really want to start moving. We're struggling on the right side right now. We'd really like to get Dion over to right tackle and develop him there. Cordy is what's considered a franchise left tackle, a guy who was a top 10 left tackle in this league just a couple of years ago before the injuries really started to pile up, especially with his feet. So maybe they're saying, no, we don't really want to part with this guy. So, you know, I'll tell you what, you give us some first rounders or a first rounder and take a good portion of his salary, you know, we'll make a deal here. So I almost want to get inside the Bills' brain trust and see, would a second round pick be sufficient, and they'll eat the full cap hit for next year, which I think is, I want to say it's 9-point-something million, if I remember what I read today. Or are they like, nope, if someone wants them, we're going to have to fleece them. They're going to have to give us a lot more value. So it'd be funny to be in that room, if assuming Lockenfor's story is correct. As you know, his reporting is often suspect, as in cases like this where there's nothing verifiable about this story.
Right.
And no one's going to, you know, talk about, oh, yeah, we tried to trade for Cordy Glenn, or we tried to get rid of our starting left tackle. You know, when you look at this.
Well, today Sean McDermott said that there was a spot for him on the line, if he's ready, if he can earn it, basically. Like, if he wants, if he can play, he can make it, it's here for him. The $9.6 million cap hit would be offset by the removal of his salary and roster bonuses from BuffaloRumblings.com. Basically, the idea is you'd have about $30 million saved over the next couple of years before you, not counting whoever you would end up replacing him with. But, I mean, they're in a financially, I don't want to say tight spot. This year they certainly are. And they couldn't move a guy like, in a weird way, like moving him actually helps them probably move Marcell Dareus next year, because that's even more money off the books that they can, you know, then the cap hit for getting rid of Dareus isn't as onerous. But you know, for a team that certainly started the season shedding payroll and shedding players and turning, you know, players into draft picks, it makes sense that if they could get a first or second round. Now it could be a conditional pick kind of thing, like a first round pick if the Seahawks finish in the, you know, make the playoffs, or so that way it's like in the low first round. But if it's a high first round, then maybe they would become a second round kind of deal. You could structure a trade like that. It's just weird too, because football trades are so rare, especially where schemes are.
Except
so
for the Bills, apparently, who've been trading by the sackful with
right
the Hawkins trade, the Darby trade, the McCoy trade, you know.
Right, and that doesn't even count the last big guys who did the McCoy trade. And but I guess what I was getting at was, like, it's even more strange to have, like, deadline-type trades, in-season trades, or even that crazier. Because, you know, like, there's schemes and systems. And, you know, Cordy Glenn's going to show up in Seattle and not really be able to do much, because he won't know any of the lingo, and he won't know any of the blocking schemes. And so that probably goes into the calculus for Seattle too, that, you know, you're really getting him for, if you trade for him now, your hope is by December he can, you know, late November he can be a contributing player, and, you know, for the next few years. But we'll have to keep it.
I left Sean Trell out of this discussion too, which could have affected the Bills' decision making. They released Craig Maybin, which is a good sign for the secondary, and I'm sure they'll try and re-sign Maybin to the practice squad. But the fact that they activated Henderson, you know, maybe Cordy Glenn is not a huge part of their future plans, and they're willing to cut that salary. But if so, I want to see Dawkins proving his value. I want to see Sean Trell proving his value before we go down the road. Because let's be honest, Jordan Mills is not the solution on the right side of the line.
No. Let's go ahead and go to our Facebook questions. You can find our Facebook page at facebook.com/bbillsmny. We're looking to pod sometime in the Sunday. Now, look, there's a lot of comments, and we're not going to go through them all. There was a lot of, if you go to the one post about the glass half full, glass half empty, you can see all of our listeners' comments regarding the game of the Cincinnati Bengals game. And I think that it's a good idea that you listeners could go in and join the conversation there on those. But they're kind of a week old, and we talked about the game at a bit already. So I kind of just want to stick to these other questions, from starting with Tom, ignoring the obvious depth problems at WR. Jeez, I'm struggling today. Ignoring the obvious depth problems at wide receiver, the team would be vastly improved with the wise investment in the offensive line. Tyrod and McCoy would benefit massively from stable play up there, and more importantly, they are just one or two injuries away from exposing real problems. And so this is actually in response to our questions, you know, what position do you think the Bills could or should upgrade? I think that's fair.
And it is. You look at the right side, you know, they brought up in Vic Carucci's mailbag today, where's Ryan Groy? They thought enough of him to give him a $5 million a year deal, and he can't get on the field at guard ahead of John Miller or Vlad Dukakis, who have both looked terrible to one degree or another. So, you know, I think I agree. I agree with Tom. I'd like to see more of an investment in this offensive line, you know, on the interior, on the edge, because, you know, if you can get, you know, some real maulers up there, then, you know, it doesn't matter if the team's putting eight guys in the box. You're still going to be able to run the ball. And, you know, part of it, too,
right,
and it's been covered a bit, is the zone blocking scheme the Bills utilize, different from the one Rex Ryan's, you know, offense utilized. And that's one area where Ryan seemed to be superior, was his the schemes on offense worked better for the running game. So something to keep an eye on if that's a problem, and they might need to redo all the talent. But either way, we agree with Tom.
It's funny because I sort of agree with Phil, our next commenter, and I could just get the damn page to load properly. There we go.
I will read
those. No, I've got it. You can do Brian and Steven's comments. For all me, right, definitely. Phil says, definitely don't trade any of the top three round picks next year. Trades usually don't work out too well in general midseason regardless, especially for the position we need at receiver. For me, stick and ride out the season and see what we've got and then how to best spend the picks in the draft. I agree with him, particularly with regards to, you know, where you need a specific position player, like wide receiver or that kind of deal where, you know, there are just players don't necessarily naturally translate over very well and fit. I think there are a few. I think running back might be like one where it does, because you really can say, okay, we're running left. Like there's only four or five different ways you run, and it's just a matter of figuring that. I've drastically simplified the running game here, but I mean there are only, like, you're running up the middle, left or right, and in between certain people, and it's either, you know, a lot of the lingo is probably the same in a way that I think wide receivers with timing, it takes more for that to be right. And so I agree with him. Like, there probably isn't a guy out there that's going to make the difference on offense that you can pick up. So, you know, don't overinvest in this year. You know, keep riding this out as long as it'll go, and hopefully something good will happen. And if not, don't sacrifice the future for this team. A team that you didn't, you know, the front office certainly didn't believe in fully at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And the only thing, give us our, yeah.
I was going to say, I generally agree with Phil and you. And one caveat I'll make is there might be some third or second round picks I'm willing to part with depending on what is offered. But I agree with the larger point that usually, you know, those midseason trades don't work out too well. So you would have to find someone who's like, oh, why is this team getting rid of this player? Oh, it's because they're back up against the cap because they can't afford him in the coming seasons. Maybe that's one of those guys you look at. But otherwise, I'd try to hold on to those picks.
Go ask about the Green Bay wide receivers and see if any of them want to come, because they may in fact be available. So, okay, why don't you read the next comment here, and sure, I'll get our...
Works for me. So Brian Punt says, if there's a player out there that's a non-scheme fit and relatively low cost, like Hughes or Ragland were respectively, I do it. Wouldn't want to trade away the higher pick. So yeah, we largely agree there too. Do you find it curious that they haven't rolled the dice on activating Brandon Riley yet? We've seen the Hogan-like catching ability in cap. So I suppose there must be a less than obvious reason why he's left out, not good enough on special teams, starting with assignments, recognition, etc. Well, for one, he suffers from the same disease that I forgot what Bills did in the preseason, where he gets stuck in Chicago and has to Uber from Chicago to Buffalo, which he
so
had to
great.
Do. Yes, so that is the second Bill to have to Uber from Chicago to Buffalo in the last several months. But I think you're probably right with your assumptions. He's, you know, look at someone like Joe Banyard. They're thinking maybe he doesn't have a lot of special teams value, so he's inactive every week even though he's on the roster. I think he probably, Riley might not have the special teams value, and, you know, maybe his route running isn't as good. Again, I'm speculating here, but I put enough faith in the judgment of the, you know, those running the teams. I think if Brandon, and also this fact, like Brandon Riley's on the practice squad. If he were super great, someone would have picked him up already off the Bills practice squad and signed him to their 53-man roster or forced the Bills to do the same. So, that's my take. Any thoughts?
I am here. No. I have thoughts.
Oh, Scott is
back.
Yeah,
wow. Welcome back, Scott.
I will briefly just add, and hi, everybody. I will just add to Paul's point, if he was really that good, the Bills would know it before anybody else was, because he's on our practice squad. So therefore, if we haven't signed him to the real team, it's because we've seen him on the practice squad, and we're like, we can do without.
There's something to do that, isn't there? That, like, these are the professionals who are paid to figure that out. So,
and the last Facebook question is with Steven. This is a good one too, and I'm glad Scott's back for this, because when it comes to rookie QBs, we really depend on Scott because he actually watches college football with some regularity. Is Deshaun Watson as good as his numbers suggest, and will the Bills regret passing on him?
This one, I feel like the answer is no. I feel like Deshaun Watson can be good. But I would also say that the lesson of Dak Prescott to this point, at least, is quite telling to this point, because obviously he kind of basically lit the entire league on fire last year, and he's not playing terrible this year, but certainly the Cowboys have been very beatable, and he has not been kind of a world beating
Cowboys, yeah.
Yeah, a kind of world beating, you know, all pro quarterback to this point. So I would say that Deshaun Watson is going to have a bit of a, you know, this can happen with the right coaching and system if you can get a quarterback who has a good matchup coming into the league. And he's got a specific set of things that he does well. It's going to take the league a little while to figure out what those things are that he does well, and then figure out what he can't do well. And then once you start figuring those things out, then the quarterback has to change his game, has to modify, has to, you know, further accentuate his strengths with the staff to kind of mitigate those. And that's what I think we'll have to see with Watson before we can really say that he's going to be like the guy the Bills should have taken. There are many quarterbacks the Bills should have taken in the last 15 years. he could certainly be on the list. But I think at this point, if you told me that, you know, he was going to have like a, you know, this start to the season, I'd be very excited if he was on the Bills, but I also would be very much kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, if he was, you know, putting up these kind of numbers with us too, so.
Right. So we had gone through, we had discussed the injuries and possibly Cordy Glenn being traded, and then obviously it started our Facebook questions, but we promised our listeners that you would do three stars when you returned from the Bengals game, if you are prepared to do so.
Yes, I am always prepared to do so, because I'm always ready for this kind of thing. It's one of my favorite segments to do. I enjoy doing it for the listeners. That's not true. I don't like any of the listeners, but I enjoy doing it for you guys. Nonetheless, we will do it. Let's see, your honorable mentions from last week's Bills Bengals aim are, hold on, I do have them. They're coming.
We need a theme song for you to.
Anyway, oh yes, it was going to be Vontaze Burfict. That's who it was. Vontaze Burfict was, it was not that LeSean McCoy didn't, he had, this was probably the closest we had to having a normal run game, probably since the Jets game. And I feel like, mm-hmm. with the exception of one log run that got eventually called back because of holding, the reason that we didn't have more of them was because Burfict was actually pretty unbelievable for most of the game. He gets an honorable mention, though, because he did have a personal foul, which, again, is kind of Vontaze Burfict kind of in toto at this point. But he did have 13 tackles and the sack, and, again, kind of helped stop the Bills' offense, kind of at least a run game to a certain extent, dead in its tracks. Third star goes to, very rare that you get a third star that has more interceptions than touchdowns, but Andy Dalton, it's tough to put those interceptions on him, because at least one of them, if I recall, was directly off of Green hands. And I think the other one was too as well, or maybe off somebody else's hands. I'm trying to remember. Something like that. Anyway, he was 22 of 36 for 328 yards and a touchdown. And he obviously, you know, got the Bengals to a win. So that's usually, pretty helpful in that respect. Your, second star is going to be, Geno Atkins, who again was part of another
inventor of the diet, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. In addition to kind of slimming down America, was not slimming down on impact in this game, if you will.
Well done.
You know, probably not even our worst pun of the pod yet.
Nope.
Oh no, it's been one of those.
Got room to grow.
anyway, he was also kind of very much kind of blowing up run plays here and there throughout the game. Again, only ended up with one sack, two tackles for loss, but again, part of a complete kind of Bengals defensive performance. And I potentially controversially, but I still feel like AJ Green gets the first star. Yes.
He had a lot of bad moments in that game, but he also had all the difference making plays.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you took him out of this game, what happens? I'm pretty sure that the Bills win.
It's a 3-3 tie.
Well, yeah, it's a terrible game that no one should watch. It's a terrible game that no one would watch. And it would have been a lot less exciting to watch. But I think the Bengals lose because he was the guy who had the difference. I mean, the run game was getting nothing done on the ground for them. You know, LaFell and some of these other guys had little catches here and there. But the Bills were able to kind of do just enough to move the ball down. They had one touchdown drive, and they were able to get kind of maybe one of those turnovers happens regardless. And so maybe they'd be able to scratch out 10 points, and I'm not sure the Bengals would have gotten there without AJ Green. So those are your three stars.
Well done. Very good. It was so nice to have you back. So before we do this day in Bills history, which really we sort of – no, actually, we should do this day in Bills history.
No, I was sorry. Hey, Dutz, dude, we can do something else first.
I was just going to say we didn't really stick to our usual quarterly season predictions. And it's fine because there was a bye week and it really was like the first five games and it would have been weird to do it a couple weeks ago. But now really we have three more games before the eight game mark. Home against the Raiders, a road game against the Jets, but next week Bills Bucks. So I wanted your thoughts on home Raiders and road Jets. I think they could both – Paul and I touched on it earlier. They're in a position to win – rip off three games here. Not saying they will, but you know, they're looking at a beat-up Raiders team, a Jets team they've already beat, and a Bucks team that may be starting Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback this week. So I don't know. I think if EJ Manuel starts as the Raiders quarterback, I think I got to pick Buffalo at home. And the Jets are playing better than they're supposed to, but I think I still got to pick Buffalo to repeat beating them on the road. Scott, are you looking at these two games differently?
It is. I mean, the critical, I think the way to think about these games is in the sense of the injuries. If the Bills are going into these games without – now, the latest I heard, I don't know if you guys talked about this already, was the Jordan Matthews, like, he is now officially day vice week to week. Now, that's pretty huge given how, again, close these games were. But then you wonder if he's actually going to be, you know, healthy or with it or, you know, going to be fully kind of up to speed. I mean, obviously, he's barely been in the offense anyway, so it's not like he can get that much better than where he was.
Right.
But,
although by very bit in the offense, that also equals Bill's most impactful wide receiver.
This is true. With the 10 catches and 150 yards is critical to this point.
Which I think is approximately Sammy Watkins' numbers at this point in the season. He had the one good game, but this season I think Watkins is 15 for 222.
Yeah, exactly. So little did we know that trade was completely meaningless. Anyway, Derek Carr did start last week. So I am a little bit worried about the Raiders game also. I think if I was going to pick one for the Bills to lose, it would be the Raiders game more so than the Jets game. Also because the Oakland defense is not terrible, I can kind of see Khalil Mack isn't hurt for them, right? No, I don't think so. I could see him torching a number of our tackles, no matter who we have at tackle. In the course of the game, I could see that kind of ending poorly for Tyrod. And then we could get beast moded. I think that kind of thing could happen. Mm-hmm. I can kind of see that. Even though the run defense has been pretty fantastic this year. And obviously the Raiders do have some pretty good, wide receivers still. So we obviously had a good secondary. I think you're right. I think we got a good chance to win both games, but if I was more worried about one, it would be the Raiders game.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think Carr could be a big difference maker. They still have all the talent that Scott mentioned, but you know, it's as we've seen, and you know, we talked about parity a lot when you were off, Scott, just noting how the AFC stacks up. You have two teams that have a record not between 2-4 and 4-2, which would be the Chiefs and the Browns at either end of that spectrum. So, mm-hmm. You know, being a home team in these games gives you at least some. What of an advantage? Because there's not a lot of disparity, if you will, between these teams. So I think we'll talk about the Bucs. I think they'll beat the Jets. They've already beaten them once, but I'm not overlooking that game by any means. But I definitely have a little more worry about the Raiders game. But I've been wrong before.
I forget. Is the Raiders?
Well, there
is
you
the
go.
Raiders at home? Is it at Buffalo or is it at
Raiders is in Buffalo? Yeah.
I feel like that's also see even that makes me now I'm thinking maybe it is the Jets just because the West Coast East Coast thing. I mean that may have bitten the Broncos a little bit, but obviously the Broncos are not. Are you guys at all concerned by the fact that like our two big wins this year are now like the Falcons lost to the Dolphins on Sunday and the
yeah this is
the
great
Broncos
we definitely
lost to the Giants.
Yeah, we definitely remarked on the college football how that doesn't help our rankings to have them, you know, our quality wins are looking like garbage at this moment.
Okay. Yeah, and even the loss to Carolina, it's like, oh, Carolina beat it. Oh, Carolina just lost at home. Boy, it's what an up and down.
We came to the conclusion that most of the AFC is kind of in the same garbage bag. I mean, so and Buffalo has sort of built, you know, Buffalo is on the right side of 3-2 or 2-3, honestly, for most of the AFC. So
there have been plenty of seasons where we've been kind of at this point, and we're like, well, maybe we can string together a few wins and get back in the playoff hunt and not be 3-2. And it's kind of like, well, we're at 3-2, so actually we're kind of in the playoff hunt now. We string together a couple wins. We're in really good shape.
They're the top wild card seed and a half game out of the division through no fault of their own. So
exactly, they're not behind in the loss column, as you would say for baseball. So.
Precisely. So, I mean, they've built themselves a nice little bed, and now they get to lie in it. Speaking of lying in it, let's talk about this day in Bill's history, which I hopefully involves a bed or lying down.
I'll figure out a way to make it work. Hopefully, I can find a player in this game named Bill Bed. That'll be my challenge. Yeah. But it was the Buffalo Bills this day in Bills or Buffalo News this day in Bills history picked the lamest like 3-0 game just because it was like one of three wins that Bills coach had with the team and it was just a terrible game. I've looked at a couple others. They did beat the in 2005. I thought about it because they beat the Jets and those are always fun to talk about. We would have watched this game together the first year we knew each other. Got them to 3-3, but it was a big tease of a year. And they would only win two more games all season, so I didn't want to do that. And then 2011, this was also part of their super hot start that they had. They lost today to the Giants. That was that crazy Fred Jackson Tecmo Super Bowl run where he, like, weaved back and forth from one side of the field to the other and went for an 80-yard touchdown. I believe that was the only career touchdown reception of Naaman Roosevelt's career that day, at least at the NFL level. He catches plenty of them in the CFL nowadays. So those were some possible choices, but I went with what I've done before because it's simply a classic in Bills history. It's an under-talked about classic, and we're going to go back to what overall was a disappointing season. And by the way, back then, disappointing season meant they only won the division and didn't really get home field throughout the playoffs. They had to go on the road in the playoffs and lost. 1989, 28 years ago. Wide receiver, there were no wide receivers in this game. None of them. I meant quarterback, Frank Reich, was starting on Monday Night Football against the undefeated then Los Angeles, now again Los Angeles Rams. Jim Kelly had suffered a shoulder separation, a 37-14 loss to the Colts. And there was a little known backup named Frank Reich. He had, he had not had much playing experience at all in this game. The Rams were in their eighth season with John Robinson at head coach, had a pass-oriented offense. Jim Everett had both Flipper Anderson and Henry Ellard as targets, two of the, you know, great receivers of that era. So here was Monday Night Football. It was a rainy evening. Jerry Gray intercepted Frank Reich's second pass of the night, which gave them good field position. He would later go on to be defensive coordinator of the Bills, you may remember. So Rams got on the board first. Scott Norwood hits field goals then of 38, 47. Scott Norwood, 47 yards. Sorry. Field goals. The Bills mounted a very good fourth quarter comeback in this game. They were down. They were down at one point. They came back on 10-9 in the fourth quarter. And then some crazy stuff happened at the end of this game. So he threw a touchdown. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to slow it down. There's a one-yard touchdown pass to Thurman Thomas to put the Bills ahead 16-13 with 2:23 left. They came at the end of an 87-yard 10-play drive. It was Buffalo's only sustained movement of the game. So then Thurman Thomas later tried to run out the clock, fumbled the ball, and the Bills were trying to run it out. The good news is for the Bills, that fumble came at the 22-yard line. So the Rams are still going to have a long way to go. First play, Jim Everett, 78-yard touchdown to Flipper Anderson. So now the Rams, after the Bills seemingly have clinched it, have gone up 20-16. So everyone's thinking, well, that's it. The Bills have done nothing offensively save that last drive. So that's going to be that. Reich then drives Buffalo 64 yards in 7 plays, all passing plays, capped the drive with a pass to Andre Reed, who got hit when he crossed the goal line, made the catch, and lo and behold, in his Monday Night Football debut, and I believe the only game that I can remember Frank Reich playing on Monday Night Football, the Bills knock off the previously undefeated Los Angeles Rams by 23-20 in a thrilling game for 80,000 fans. The Rams would go on to have a great season, 11-5. They would get knocked out of the playoffs, I assume, by the 49ers. I'm not even going to bother to look that up. I just did. It was the 49ers. Yeah, waste of time. Made all the way to the conference title game after beating the Eagles and Giants. But, man, the Niners of that era were just unbeatable. So it was really just a crazy back-and-forth game. I was in bed when this game ended, I remember, and my dad was at the game. He had described it to me the whole next day. But, again, a game I know I discussed before, but, you know, not one that that many fans remember. So that was this day in Bills history on October 16th, 1989. And the trivia question has to be forthcoming. And I try to make these as obscure as possible. I'm trying to think of, ooh, this could be a good one here. This
oh, you're is thinking. Of,
go ahead.
Yeah, the Rams got blown out. The Rams got blown out 30-3 in the NFC Championship game. By San Francisco, who then went on to win the Super Bowl 55-10 against the Denver Broncos.
Well, at least they were blowing everyone out. That's that's half the battle. So, oh man,
34-3. Oh no, go ahead. Sorry, I just realized what I just. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think it looked up the right game. I just checked it out too. But so my trivia question for this game is this. Can you name this day a player I've never heard of, but who started 122 games in the NFL as a left tackle and finished his career with Indy the next two seasons? Can you name the Rams starting left tackle in this game?
The Rams starting left tackle in this game?
Yes. I've never heard of him. That is my clue.
But
his name is awesome. That's literally the reason I chose him. As I looked at his name, I'm like, that's an awesome name, and I'm going to work you into the trivia question.
Well, it's got to be Jackie Slater. I mean, I want to give Scott a chance to answer here, but I'm going to go with Jackie Slater.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. It's close. It's very close. But as Frank may remember, this actually, he did play for left tackle for a while. Before that, he was probably most well known for his stronghold on Mount Korydallos in Greece, when he would, and Paul was correct. He did manage to work in a bed reference to this day in Bills history because, before he went on to play left tackle for the Rams and start all those games, he was known to take, wayward travelers and fit them to his bed. Either by shortening them, by amputating their appendages, or by stretching them out on a stretching thing. What do you call that? A rack.
Yeah.
But anyway, his name
a
is
stretchy thing. Yeah.
A stretchy thing.
Don't introduce that one in your high school gym program, though. Yeah, we've got this stretching device.
Anyway, his name, of course, was Procrustes. You were thinking of Procrustes, Frank.
Yeah.
I've had to Google, so Procrustes. Oh, he's on a base. I see that. So,
or a pod.
Yeah.
I was always Procrusty too. I mean, he was a good guy.
If you had, do you remember, this is kind of I'm going to throw this right back at Scott with a bit of a minor trivia question. Do you remember Procrustes' first name, which is not on the Wikipedia page or anywhere in Greek mythology?
Orlando.
It's close. It was Irv Procrustes.
Irv Procrustes.
His middle name was Panky.
Irv Panky.
Irv Panky is, yes, Panky Prokrusty. So
Jackie Slater was the other tackle. Okay.
Yeah. Jackie Slater went to the Hall of Fame. Irv Panky apparently is coaching at Aberdeen High School, I believe, nearby. That's where he went to high school. He now coaches at the College of the Sequoias in California. There is not much when you let's put it this way. You Google him more, you'd find more on him on Google than you do Camille Loud, which was our trivia question a few weeks ago. But aside for an article about Jackie Slater and Irv Panky, who I revered in an article in the New York Times, you don't find many Irv Panky references online. So kudos to both of you, Scott, as always, for the correct answer. And Frank, for mentioning Jackie Slater, who's mentioned in tandem in this New York Times article from January 7th of 1990, with Jackie Slater and Irv Panky Prokrusty's. So, so that was this day in Bills history.
All right. Wow. I'm excited. No, I'm not excited. Sorry. But that was really good. Thank you very much. I wonder if they called him Hanky Panky. So Bills.
Yeah, I'm on his LinkedIn page now, so I'm sure he's going to track me down. It's like that time I went to Jamie Miller's LinkedIn page and he knew who I was.
Bills open as small favorites against the Buccaneers. That's what I've seen from New York State, up New York.
Upstate New York.com. Yeah. Or up New York State. Same thing.
No, the website is NewYorkUpstate.com. So they are currently 3-point favorites over the Buccaneers. So it's kind of a pick 'em game because it's going to be in Buffalo. Possibly no Jameis Winston. What else do we know about the Buccaneers?
They still have Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson, which are two pretty good.
Right, positions. So that's big. That's pretty good.
I believe Sean King, Brad Johnson, Rob Johnson are all retired at this point.
They lost to the Bengals
last.
Yep. Oh no, wait, I'm trying to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so they lost to the Bengals. They beat the Jags. They lost to the Browns. That's a lot of AFC games to start the year for them.
Oh yeah, you got to look at someone else's schedule there because you only play one division. You only play one division. The other.
Yeah, that's not right. Thank you, Google, for bringing down the exact wrong. That's stupid. Google.
Damn you, Google. Yeah, Google got the Cardinals, the Giants, the Vikings, and the Bears, and they have wins over the Bears and the Giants, and losses to the Vikings, Patriots, and Cardinals. No shame really in any of those.
Okay. No, but the Patriots are straight. So it's probably fair. It's probably a good matchup for Buffalo. I'll say the Bills win by 52.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the confidence.
I think that Jordan Matthews is going to come back and Tre'Davious White's going to get a couple pick sixes and Micah Hyde's going to, of course, get a pick six or two. And so,
yeah, for a team that scored 89 points all season through five games, that would be an accomplishment.
Well, they're going to get they had a bye week, so they're going to get 2 weeks worth of scoring.
And I didn't mean to make fun of the fact that they've scored 89 points because, in case you're wondering, the Dolphins have scored 61. They've scored 61 points, allowed 84, and they've won 3 out of 5 games. That is just
crazy. That is not what the formula says should happen.
No. Mind you, every team in the NFC has scored at least 100 points, at least 105 points, but the Dolphins have scored 61.
Paul, do you have any?
Very good.
Let's see. I'm going to pick the Bills in this one, too, I think. I think if Winston doesn't play, Fitzpatrick plays, and honestly, that scares me more because he finds ways to make the Bills hurt, it seems. So I will say the Bills, though, I think they have that 3-point home advantage. I think it's going to be a close game, and I'm going to pick them at the spread. I'm going to say the Bills win this one 23-20.
I'm going to tell you what happens in this game.
This is like meet your second wife where you can predict the future. Do you guys remember that Saturday Night Live sketch? No? All right.
I think I do. It was a good sketch. I do remember that. And
I showed it to my parents and it was met with crickets, but essentially the premise, because this is what our podcast is about.
It's pretty brutal.
Is they take three guys in their 30s and they bring out these women and they're like, hey, this is your second wife and the oldest one's like 12. So it's really a little sketchy, but hilarious.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, I just like to point out that at the beginning of this episode, Scott said, let's make sure to have a good episode this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing blew up. So now we're talking about child
porn. Now our listeners have an accurate impression.
Polygamy sketches.
Like, I look at all
not marrying them at the same time, Frank. It's meet your second wife, and then after you've divorced your first wife.
Oh, well, that makes it fine. Excuse me. I guess that
Come on. All right. So this is how the game goes. This is how the game goes on Sunday. The Bills get off to a good lead. Jameis Winston brings him back, but then Jameis Winston's arm falls off because he's playing. See, the thing is with Winston is that he has a sprained AC joint, I guess, in his elbow or his shoulder. I think that's where the AC is. And so the problem is that he's not going to be able to throw particularly well for an extended period, I think. I think maybe he's going to try and go because he's young. He's a gamer. He said today that he's not going to miss this game. But I think we are going to see some Ryan Fitzpatrick time. I think Fitzpatrick's going to bring them down the field. I think he's going to get him close. I think he's going to throw one backbreaking interception after another, as they attempt to survive. I think the Bills offense will continue to not do a lot. So I see this getting down to like a 17-16 game where the Bills are ahead late. And then I see the Bucks getting into field goal range late. And then luckily for the Bills, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers starting kicker is still evidently Nick Folk, despite the fact that I'm pretty sure lost them a game pretty much straight away.
I think he's just missing a kick right now. Whatever he's doing now, he's missing a kick. You can be assured of that.
Pretty much. If I'm correct, yes, he was 0 for 3 against the Patriots in a 5-point loss. So I definitely see the Bills ending up winning this game, something along the lines of 17-16 after some failed extra points or field goals from Nick Folk. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I feel like now you have a good handle on what this podcast is. Because
we
just let Scott do all the heavy.
But now it's way too late to even go back.
If you wanted to know what our thoughts about, you know, the Bills' defensive scheme was going to – problems they were going to present to Jameis Winston specifically with their line play and whether the wide receivers were going to create mismatches. Nope. Not on this show.
You get a view of the future here that's infallible.
Yeah, but so, let's be fair. Every time you listen to one of those podcasts where someone's like, "Well, these are the mismatches," it never works out that way. Everyone lies to you. They just say stuff, and then they're always wrong.
#Fake news.
We revel in our ignorance.
We're just going for it, right? Like, we're not going to tell you who's going to win the game. I mean, we're going to tell you who's going to win the game, but we're not going to have a really good reason why.
We're going to tell you what you want to hear, which is that the Bills are awesome. They're going to win all their games. And alternatively, for everyone who is kind of hates the Bills and enjoys watching them kind of fail so that we all can wallow in our misery together, we're going to lose every game too. We can do that both. We can talk out of the same side, both sides of the same mouth. It's unbelievable.
It's really like there's six mouths on this podcast at any one time. If you would like to send email to our many mouths, if you'd like to put stuff in our mouth, you could send it to bbillsmny@gmail.com or go to our blog, bbillsmny.wordpress.com, where we don't do anything except post this podcast.
Right. You send an email to that address. Will it get read? It's like, again, the tree falling in the forest thing.
Yeah, you know what? I better check the email while I'm talking to you guys about it. You can also go to facebook.com/bbillsmny, which is really, that's the bread and butter. That and our Twitter, which is bbillsmny.
And I do want to give a shout out to so many people who are communicating with me on Twitter on Sunday. I had some good questions, some good interactions. So thanks, Orlando and Ryan and Brian and Reza and all the usual crew who interacted with me during the game Sunday. And I look forward to interacting with you guys this coming Sunday.
Thank you for mentioning our fun followers and listeners. On the Gmail and on the blog, we have a comment from definitely a bot, but not a fun bot. So that's it.
I really wanted it to be like someone's attention, bbillsmny. You are being served by the State District Court of New York for copyright infringement. Please respond to this in the next 30 days or you will be sued.
Is that what you really wanted? Okay, great. You can find our website. You can go into the Google machine, type Buffalo Bills maybe next year. We're generally on the second page with all the really good heavy hitters, not these people who, you know, game the search engine optimization stuff. You know,
by posting more than one thing a week.
Anyway, yeah.
We should try.
Right. Now look, we maybe had to shake off a little rust this week for the after the bye.
We're coming off the bye, everyone. So
that's all right. We're like, we don't have Andy Reid coaching us off the bye here. So, or is he the one that's bad off the bye?
He's good. He's exceptionally good. You got it.
He's the good one, right? Yeah, he's the one who's exceptionally good, right? Everyone else is kind of like 50-50. Well, we'll be here next week to talk about the Bills versus Buccaneers game and have a better handle on, you know, what the next couple of weeks are going to be like in these critical games where the Bills can really stack a few wins if they take the opportunity. So thank you so much.
Stacking wins. Remember that terminology? Was that a media thing, stacking wins, or was it a Rex Ryan thing? Can't even remember.
Good.
I tried to destroy your flow.
That was great. You did a wonderful job. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you have a great night. I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Goodbye.